Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. Finally, we have another new episode, Kartik, and we've got some big news to share. I mean, for anyone who's gone to worldsoccertalk.com this week, you would have seen it. We kind of hinted at it last week, and finally it's live. It's a brand new website. It's a completely different design. I had a lot of, it's interesting too, because I in doing this redesign, and well, we've got a new logo, we've got a new look and feel for the newsletter. I guess I found out how many people didn't like the old design. I thought the old design was okay, it was kind of simple, but the feedback from everyone was that this is so much better than the old design, and that's fine. I agree with that. But Kartik, yeah, so listeners, if you haven't had a chance to check it out yet, big news, and that's worldsoccertalk.com. Complete different new look and feel, new logo. Podcast has got a new logo too, and I think it looks really, really good. Having said that, Kartik, let's move on, because actually let's skip the what we've been watching and go straight to the news. For listeners who are tuning in this week and have not listened to this podcast before and you're wondering, what are we rambling on about? It is about the soccer media business. So everything from television production, our favorite commentators, who's doing the best job of covering the games, the latest streaming news and how that affects our viewing experience. And we touch on other topics too. But Kartik, let's talk about the first topic. And this is an interesting one because Copa Libertadores is a big deal, especially a big deal in South America. It's a big deal in the United States where we record this. It's a major tournament. And there was some news that was released this week that could give us an idea of perhaps who the rights might be going to, perhaps in the future.
Yeah, some really interesting, maybe progressive news from CONMEBOL in terms of the streaming rights being exclusively offered, separate from the media rights. CONMEBOL, along with their media agency that they've retained, which is FCDS Media, have told broadcasters that they would take bids from streaming-only services, that those would be considered for the 2023 to 2026 rights cycle, the upcoming rights cycle that's up for bid. So you could very easily see Copa Libertadores maybe ending up on a streaming-only surface, which gives us greater access to the games than, quite frankly, we've had in the United States. Let's say this happens in the United States, because as you know, it's been a challenge at times to find Copa Libertadores matches on American television and on American streaming. So this is a potentially big news in that they will take bids from streaming-only packages.
Yeah, on this one, Kartik, I would disagree with you. I would say that beIN Sports is probably a good home for Copa Libertadores. They show all the games. Any games that are happening at the same time, they would have available on beIN Sports Connect. They've provided Spanish language, English language, and Portuguese language of the competition. I think your point about accessibility is probably more so about just beIN Sports in general. There's a lot of people that don't get beIN Sports
or don't like it. Whether there's a justified bias or not, Chris. Generally, when things now are on beIN, there are complaints about them and complaints about the accessibility, complaints about the coverage. So, if it goes to a streaming only platform, it may feel like it's more accessible. At the same time, I don't know that beIN can afford not to have the rights in this country, right? I don't think. I mean, we seem to talk about this every week with where beIN is, but I think they need to retain these.
Well, this is the last year under the current deal with beIN Sports. So beIN Sports, I would imagine, would be interested in renewing this. But at the same time, there will be other bidders for sure. And beIN Sports, I could see beIN Sports in the future becoming effectively a Gold TV, which still in business, still producing programming, a very small staff and still on the airwaves. But nothing like it was once before. Same with Gold TV. Gold TV at one point had the Bundesliga, had La Liga. I mean, at sometimes Serie A. Gold TV at different points in its history has been a top dog in soccer coverage, or at least one of the top dogs. Now it's almost forgotten about. And I think beIN Sports, if it wants to stay in business, would probably end up being very much like that, where, yes, it's available, but doesn't have all the big games. And, you mean, kind of its glory days are in the past. But, yeah, no, I think your point, too, about beIN Sports and the accessibility of it. You mean, in some ways, beIN Sports is as accessible as any other streaming service, if not more so accessible. It's on pretty much everywhere in terms of all the streaming packages you want to sign up for. But yeah, Copa Libertadores, if I'm CONMEBOL, I'm like, do I want to have my top club competition, effectively the Champions League version in South America? Do I want it on beIN Sports? Would I much prefer it to be on ESPN Plus or Paramount Plus or the WarnerMedia / Discovery streaming service? There's a whole bunch of options there. Or some other streaming service. Will I get more cachet by having my competition on a major broadcast streaming service? And I think so, Kartik. I think so. I think we're at the point in time now where beIN Sports, if you're a fan of Ligue 1 or the Turkish League, you're probably happy with what you have because you have more coverage than ever before on television. Copa Libertadores, I don't know, maybe it deserves better. Do you agree, Kartik?
Yeah, I do agree. And I think, again, there's maybe a built-in bias against beIN, and people were happier when they were getting these matches on Fox Deportes, and you were just getting sporadic matches than they are with it on beIN, which, again, I don't necessarily agree with that point of view, but I just know it's fairly widespread in the soccer community, and the reputation of beIN took another hit during the Cup of African Nations. So, but opening this up to maybe streaming-only platforms connected to a major broadcaster, I think is a very, very positive thing potentially for CONMEBOL and Copa Libertadores, and having kind of a one-stop shop home where you can find the matches is good too, because yeah, beIN is a broadcaster that has some matches are on beIN, some are only on beIN in Espanol, some are on beIN Sports Connect, right? So that also will streamline it for fans of South American football.
It could, but also it could make it more confusing. I mean, one of the advantages with Copa Libertadores is that you know that beIN Sports has the rights and they have all the games exclusively. But if there was, in terms of the next rights cycle, so we'll find out this year what happens for 2023 onwards to 2026. But what happens if there's two broadcasters, one broadcaster in English, one in Spanish, and the Spanish one might be TUDN. You mean, and they have some of the games on television, but then the English language broadcasts, some of those are on, say, Paramount Plus, or it's split. You mean, then there's always kind of the, okay, which place do I watch the game? Who has the game? And then the other thing, too, is if say, CBS went in and said, okay, hey, we're picking up the rights on both TV and streaming. Streaming's a slam dunk with Paramount Plus. But the TV side of things, I mean, CBS Sports Network, how much programming is on during a weeknight? I mean, is there opportunities to show games, or does it get pushed to the side because of some other competition? So, yeah, we'll have to see what happens on that one. But that's definitely a story to keep an eye on. Now, Kartik, we're recording this on Thursday. On Wednesday, I was on a teleconference call in regards to some major news, and that is that Televisa Univision has gotten into the streaming wars, and they are launching a brand new streaming service, and just what we wanted, right? Another streaming service to complicate things. Well, this one is a little bit different, and it's still, I'm still a little bit sketchy on some of the details. I'm still working on trying to get all of the nuts and bolts in order to try to figure out exactly how this is going to work. But this is a big deal. So there's two parts of it. There's VIX, which is going to be a advertising supported streaming service. So that would be very much like beIN Sports Extra or some of the channels on Pluto TV, where you have a lot of programming and then you have advertising built into it. And it's free for the consumer. You just have to kind of sit through ads as you would normally do on regular television. And then they have VIX Plus. And VIX Plus is their subscription streaming platform. Now, what's the first thing you think of, Kartik, when you hear the name VIX?
You think of VapoRub, VIX VapoRub or NyQuil.
Yeah, well, so this one's spelled a little bit differently, so it's VIX. But the first thing I thought of, you know, VIX is definitely a good one. I didn't think of that one, but the first thing I thought of was Wix, the kind of the basically hosting website platform where you can create your own website. And they've done a ton of advertising over the years. So I guess that in these days, I mean, the name isn't as important as long as it sticks and people remember it. And it's easy to type into, you mean, a browser, whether it's a phone or a computer. But that's the name. But let me look through my notes in terms of some of the notes that I wrote down in regards to this news. So, again, I'm going to get all the details, and I'll have a major story at worldsoccertalk.com that goes into a lot more detail than this. But it looks like VIX will also include beIN Sports and Espanol. And this is the one thing I'm trying to get clarification on. Is this beIN Sports Extra in Espanol, or is this beIN Sports en Espanol? Because in the presentation, it was beIN Sports en Espanol, which is a big deal because that's, you mean, only available through, you mean, cable or satellite or through a streaming service such as Fubo TV, etc. So that's the first part of it. They will have free live soccer on VIX. The other thing, I mean, so they'll have a game of the week now and again. Most of the coverage is going to be on VIX Plus, but they will have some soccer on VIX. The other thing, too, they're going to have a 24/7 sports news channel. It's going to be called Zona Tuduene, and that's going to have everything from, you know, of course, news, but also interviews and some discussions, etc., kind of analysis, too. So that's a big deal. Ultimately, they're going to have 100-plus channels on there. Now, my question, Kartik, when I first heard this news, before we get to VIX Plus, is what happens to Prende TV? And Prende TV was the big deal that Univision announced about a year ago. That's been kind of a place to go to that is very similar to VIX, if not almost exactly the same, except for the name. And it sounds like Prende TV is going to be phased out over time, and then VIX will be the streaming place to go to watch these 100-plus linear channels. Some of it will include soccer games, but not a ton. All right, so that's VIX. This is confusing, right? I mean, this is kind of, it's like so much going on. The other part of it is VIX Plus, and they are positioning this as the home of soccer for Spanish language fans. Now, VIX Plus, they haven't decided yet on what the price will be, but it will be premium. It'll be premium content on here, including, of course, movies, telenovelas, dramas, etc. in Spanish language. It will have, according to Univision, it will have 3,000, actually more than 3,000 live soccer games a year. So what it sounds like is they're taking kind of all their properties and putting it on VIX Plus, and it'll include Liga MX games. It's going to have four of the teams on there. Now I'm trying to find out which of those four teams. Is it Club America? Is it Tigres? Is it, you mean, Cruz Azul? Or is it FC Suarez and some of the other teams? So I'm getting clarification on that. Again, we'll have the story at worldsoccertalk.com. And then it's also going to have the Champions League. And the way that they positioned it, Kartik, is that that VIX Plus will be the exclusive home of the Champions League in Spanish. And this is a big deal because my first question was, okay, well, what about television? What about Univision? What about Unimas? What about Galavision? What about Tuduene? Does this mean that all of the Champions League games are now going to be exclusively in Spanish on VIX Plus and no longer on Univision, no longer some of the games on Prende TV. That's what it sounds like. But again, I'm getting clarification on this. So it sound, overall, the big message is goodbye, Prende TV. Hello, VIX. And then VIX, the first one, will probably have some Argentine games, some Brazilian games, maybe Game of the Week here and there. And then VIX Plus is going to be the new destination for Spanish language viewers. Kartik, given all that, I mean, what's your thoughts or analysis around this whole news?
Well, I think that the basic piece of analysis is that Prende TV didn't quite fill the bill in the streaming wars for Televisa and Univision. I think that you have a situation where they launched out with much fanfare, and it was just a streaming service that was kind of lost in the ether somewhere, right? Just another streaming service. So this, I think, gives them an opportunity to get a subscription-based type constituency, and they're offering, it appears to be, based on your notes, a lot more than was offered on Prende TV. So this is them entering kind of the streaming wars with the Discoveries, with the HBO Maxes, with the Disneys and the NBCs and CBSs in a way that Prende TV did not allow them to.
Yeah, a few more things on this too is that the way they're positioning it is it's one global app. So when they're talking about VIX and VIX Plus, they're talking about globally. So it's going to be a global streaming service. Most of the Spanish language community around the world, the largest number, are based in Mexico and the United States of America. So it makes a lot of sense in terms of launching a streaming service. But the other thing that they were pushing too is that a question came up and said, okay, well, what about Televisa and what about Univision? Like, how do they differentiate? And I think it was the CEO, he says, we are one company. It's not Televisa, it's not Univision, it's Televisa Univision. It's one company. That's the name, that's the brand, and it's those two companies together to form one company. So just as in the past where we would talk about CBS Viacom, which is recently renamed actually this past week to Paramount, which is different than Paramount Plus, but at least it's kind of in line with, you mean, Paramount and then Paramount Plus. Just as CBS Viacom, it's now Televisa Univision. So it's a big deal. I mean, this is a major announcement. And the way I look at it, Kartik, is that this is pretty... I mean, Telemundo, so you look at Telemundo Deportes, which is their biggest competitor in the United States, they really don't have their own streaming service, right? Because they're attached to Peacock, and they've got Telemundo coverage. They're creating kind of sections on Peacock that are going to have Spanish language content on there, including games. But it's not a Spanish language app. It's an English language app that has Spanish language add-ons or sections. Now with VIX and VIX Plus, it's completely Spanish language. I mean, kind of the vision for this. So it makes it easier to go ahead and promote that as, hey, this is the home of soccer for a Spanish language audience. And I would imagine too, Kartik, that they'd be looking to boost this with some more rights, and they might look at, say, MLS. And MLS, maybe they make a big play to try to get MLS and say, okay, well, VIX Plus also include, in addition to the Champions League, in addition to some of the games from Mexico, the Mexican national team, in addition to some of the other games that it has rights to, Liga MX, of course, is MLS. And MLS from 2023 onwards... for the Spanish language audience, I mean, the home to go to, the main place to go to is MLS. So it's a big deal. And again, I'm going through all the details just because there's a lot to take into consideration here and trying to get some clarification on the news. But for Spanish language viewers, I think it's a massive deal. And then for the rest of us, too, it's a big deal, too, because, I mean, it doesn't make any sense, though, Kartik, right, to... These Champions League games that we've had this week, we've had PSG, Real Madrid, and I mean Inter against Liverpool, and you mean more games in the future that will be on over-the-air CBS, but also over-the-air Univision. In some ways, it doesn't make sense to put these only on streaming and nothing on television. But I guess that's what CBS has been doing for the longest time with Champions League games. For the most part, almost all of them have been Paramount Plus and very few of them on over-the-air CBS. So this will be one to watch. And again, too, we'll have all the details at worldsoccertalk.com. Hopefully on Thursday, by the time this podcast is out, we'll have that article published. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. And first up, in regards to talking about Peacock, and we talked about Peacock quite a bit the last couple of weeks, because if you're a fan of the Premier League and you've been watching soccer on television, there's been a ton of games on Peacock, very few on USA Network because of the Winter Olympics. But on the horizon, I can see the Winter Olympics ending, I think this weekend, I believe. So games are coming back to USA Network. David Warren says, number one, given so many of the Premier League matches are on Peacock, and given they are running Olympics on USA Network right up until kickoff these days, do they or don't they have pre-game and post-game shows? I cannot find them on the Premier League hub. Do they exist? If so, why do they make it impossible to find online? If they don't exist, why are Arlo and all the others at SoFi Stadium for a 10-minute halftime show? All right, so that's the first point, Kartik. He's got a couple of other points, too. But first of all, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I've been very, very frustrated in finding the Premier League matches. I just think that it's the way the Peacock app is laid out and maybe the lack of priority the Premier League is given regularly on that app. It's not just an Olympics thing or a Super Bowl thing that you have to dig and dig and dig to find streams and or find things. And then once you get there, it's fine. It's great. I mean, the functionality of the app has improved, and the picture is great. I haven't had the problems where I'm thrown out at halftime. I mean, actually, in that sense, Peacock is better than Paramount Plus at this point in terms of being able to then find the stream and watch it straight through. But finding it, whereas Paramount Plus, I open the app right away, the stuff that I'm interested in pops up, you know, whether it's soccer stuff or Smithsonian Channel or documentaries, right away. Peacock, I have to dig and dig and dig and search to find Premier League content. But I do have to give them credit in that they had some issues with crashing and general reliability of the app the first year or so that the Premier League was on Peacock. Now, once you get that stream, you're good until the match ends.
Yeah, Peacock's getting better for sure. Paramount Plus is getting better too. But same thing with me, Kartik. Halftime, I always get kicked out of streaming on Paramount Plus a lot of the times for watching games, and then I have to kind of restart the stream and then it's fine. But that does happen quite a few times. We've noticed that for a while too, I think. But yeah, with Peacock, it's right now, it's getting better, but it's still too complicated. It needs to be it's confusing, right? It's confusing because I was watching this past weekend. I knew that Arlo and the crew were there, but then the games I was watching, you mean kind of the pre-match, halftime, post-match, didn't have them there. They were only on one of the games, like say the Liverpool-Burnley game. They'd be on pre-match, halftime, post-match, but not the other games that were happening at the same time. And there was one of the listeners too that I think they posted on, I think either on social media or in the comments section at worldsoccertalk.com, but he had a clue. He said, actually it was on Twitter, and he said, hey, I figured out how we know which game is going to have the NBC Sports crew talent providing shoulder programming for that game. And he says the way you do it is you go into Peacock, and when you have all the game lineups as far as, you mean it's, I don't know, Man City against Tottenham, you mean Liverpool against Burnley, whatever it is, if the graphic has pictures of the players on it, so Jack Grealish, you mean Harry Kane, etc., then those are the games that actually have pre-match, halftime, post-match. If it's a kind of a thumbnail of a game that's just, you mean, I don't know, Liverpool versus Burnley, and that's all it is, it's not going to have the pre-match, halftime, post-match, which makes sense. I mean, now that I look at it, now that I go onto Peacock, I'm like, oh, okay, all right, that makes sense now that those games are the ones. But intuitively, Ewan, that was by trial and error. I'm sure that he figured that out. But intuitively, me as a user going to Peacock, Ewan, that doesn't mean necessarily that there's a crew there covering the game. I mean, this with Peacock and the Olympics, it's a little bit screwy anyway because there's so many games on Peacock. But the experience should be much better than what it is. I mean, it should be that every game you're watching, you're getting the analysis. And we get that with the Champions League on Paramount Plus, is even if they're focusing on the one game more, if you're watching the other game that's happening at the same time, you still get the halftime post-match coverage too. So, yeah. Anyway, David goes on. He says, number two, they take the world feed for so many matches on Peacock, but they cut away abruptly less than 30 seconds after the game's end. Why? NBC owns the rights and they have tons of streaming channels. Why not run the world feed until the very end? Part of why we watch football is for the post-match celebrations and condolences. I just don't get it. They literally cut off the commentators mid-sentence, as I saw repeatedly this week, and then I couldn't find the post-match shows either, given the Olympics. So on that one, Kartik, I've noticed that, and that's been one of my biggest complaints about Fox over the last 10 years, is when they had the Premier League rights too, is as soon as the game ended, like within 2 seconds of the end, they'd cut away to a commercial. I'm like, let the game breathe. And that was one of the things that NBC Sports did right when they first started covering the game in 2013, is they would let it breathe. You'd have like a couple of minutes at least sometimes of just a post-match, and you would hear just the sound of the crowd and the players. And that was at the time, kind of a revolutionary. But yeah, I think for the Olympics, going back to what David was saying, with Peacock, after every single game, I mean, within like, 30 seconds, it would switch right to the feed for the Olympics. And they're just trying to bump up those numbers, trying to get people hooked on watching the Winter Olympics. And, hoping that they continue watching the Winter Olympics and that it'll help increase those numbers. All right, last but not least, David says, regarding Kartik's question as to why they are doing midweek shows from SoFi Stadium, because they actually don't have a free studio. Olympics using them all. Remember, NBC didn't send their play-by-play and color commentators generally to Beijing. They're using tons of studios up in Stamford, Connecticut to do off-tube commentating. And that's the other thing, Kartik, going back to kind of the point before about, we know that Ola White and the two Robbies and Tim Howard were in Los Angeles at SoFi Stadium outside it. Beautiful backdrop, looked really great. But the reality is that if they didn't send them to Los Angeles, where would they have sent them to? Because they had no studio available. So Stamford, Connecticut, where they do the Premier League Live studio, wasn't available. And so do they go with no studio, or do they try to figure out, is there another NBC Sports location with a studio that could do it? Or do we send them out to Los Angeles? And it seems a little bit of a waste with the Los Angeles Super Bowl, because they really didn't do much. I think there was one of those midweek Peacock games where we thought that they would be on air, but it didn't seem like they were. I think it was on a Tuesday game. But it's probably, I'm sure it was a lot of fun for Arlo and the two Robbies and Tim Howard being there. But for the viewership, I think, and that viewing experience, it didn't really make sense, and it didn't really add much. Jim says, great job with the podcast as always. It's a must listen every week for me. I just wanted to have a little complaint about Peacock's coverage of the Premier League. What really annoys me is that what might be a pulsating game featuring my beloved Newcastle United, the coverage ends even while the commentator is still talking about the game. You can have manager and players clapping the fans and the coverage cuts off, which really takes you out of the euphoria of a win or just your general enjoyment of a terrific game. Couldn't Peacock at least extend their coverage until the commentators have ended their dialogue and we are well into the post-match celebrations? Thanks again for a great podcast. Yeah, and Jim, NBC, we hope so. Now that this weekend is going to be the end of the Winter Olympics, hopefully they'll return to normal after that, because next week there's a whole bunch of more games on Peacock, a lot of midweek games. Yeah, if you're not on Peacock, you're definitely missing out on the Premier League because there's a ton of matches. All right, Kartik, switching to a La Liga, Bundesliga question here, and this is something that I know you're spoken to about in the past before, and this is from Martin in Colorado. Martin says, ESPN Plus has obviously been favoring La Liga over Bundesliga in every way this year. However, when I log into the ESPN Plus app, it shows me Bundesliga games as first option. Is this because of my previous viewing habits, or is it coming up for everyone like this?
For me, it's the same, but I assume it's because of my viewing habits. I watch La Liga still more sporadically than I watch the Bundesliga. I mean, I watch the Bundesliga every week, so it pops up in front of me. Quite honestly, when I open the Hulu app, the same thing happens. If there's a Bundesliga match, it's right in my face. Even on that app, that kind of stresses entertainment and stuff. So it'll be a Bundesliga match in my face, and then I'll scroll down and I'll have like movie recommendations or TV for you. But so I think it's based on an algorithm to us specifically as individuals. But that's a great question for our listeners. Are you getting Bundesliga recommended over La Liga?
Yeah, my take on this one, Kartik, is that La Liga spreads their games out through the whole weekend. So usually there might be a game, say, on a weekend, a 10:15 a.m. kickoff Eastern time, maybe a 12:30 Eastern, you mean a 2:45 Eastern. And with the Bundesliga, it's like everything happens at once almost, right? You have like, I don't know, six or seven games all happening at the same time on a Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. Then you've got like a 12:30 game, and then the next day you've got a couple of games. So if I go on to ESPN Plus on a Saturday morning, that's all I see is like Bundesliga all over the place. And then I'm scrolling through trying to find that one championship game that's hidden towards the right, or that one La Liga game, which is like to the right. I'm clicking to try to find it. So I think it's slightly personalized. It's still not as personalized as I would want it. It should know what I watch the most, but I don't think it's still not there yet. So, but yeah, listeners, if you do have any thoughts on that one, definitely let us know, because if you're having a different experience, or I mean, oftentimes I get a whole bunch of sports listed at the top I have zero interest in, and I'm just, especially on a Saturday afternoon. No offense, college football fans, but I'm going through going like, okay, I have no interest in watching any of these games. I probably have never watched any of these games, but yet I see all of them listed at the top section.
That's interesting. I don't think that's happened to me with college football. I think it's still, well, maybe Saturday after. Okay, so that's interesting. Okay, so that's after Bundesliga matches are done, right? And there's just still La Liga matches going on, because we know kickoff times tend to be later in Southern Europe.
I'm not
looking at the app at that time a lot of times, even though I like to watch La Liga, but I'm not always on that app the way I am during Bundesliga match times.
But I would say, and this is all credit to you, Kartik, but still the Hulu tip is the greatest tip, because if you subscribe to ESPN Plus and you also get Hulu, if you log into Hulu, it'll come up with some suggestions of what's happening live at that moment. And it's a more limited list. It's not everything. And that seems to be more predictive in terms of the things I'm interested in. So oftentimes when I'm going to Hulu and going through on an evening, it's got, okay, hey, ESPN FC is live right now. Or there's a game on, whatever a game it is. But that seems to be more tailored to me. Which is interesting. I don't know if that's by coincidence or if that's, but I'd imagine it would be based on.
That's another thing, right? On Hulu, I always see when ESPN FC is going on live. On ESPN Plus,
it's hard to find, right?
Yeah, I don't find it, and I end up watching it. That's a great point, actually. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, when I'm watching ESPN Plus, ESPN FC Live, it's because it shows up on my Live Now Hulu right away when I open the app.
Yeah.
When I'm watching it on tape, it's or the next morning, then it's on ESPN Plus. That's it. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, even my viewing habits for ESPN FC have been affected by the Hulu bundle, which, again, I mean, I think probably more than half the time I'm using ESPN Plus now, I'm watching it via Hulu, just because of the ease of access.
Interesting. That's good. That's good to know. And for me, I think it's I don't watch Hulu as much, but when I do go into Hulu, then I'm more likely to click through to some of the ESPN Plus live content. Because when I'm in Hulu, I'm not thinking sports. I'm thinking, okay, I don't know, the Pam and Tommy series about Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee.
But the a pro tip on if you consider me a pro, on Hulu is that with their movies, it seems like they have a lot of good movies that rotate through there. It's just a lot of chance. Like Amazon Prime, I guess not that different than Prime, but there are some months, and I know they rotate these movies through and then they come and they go on Hulu, that as a movie app, if you like older classic movies like I do, it's a better app than Netflix or Prime. So it all kind of depends. And sometimes those months are the months that I'm in the Hulu app and I'll open it and I'll say, okay, I want to watch this old Western that I know that they have on Hulu this month because it's shown up in my inbox and the email, hey, this might be of interest to you. I open it up and it's like, oh yeah, that Bundesliga match is going on. I'll watch that first. So they've done a really good job. I think just in general, Disney seems a step ahead in understanding their customers and their preferences and trying to deliver it right to you directly with the least amount of fuss. So this is contrasted with what we've just talked about, Chris, which is the Paramount Plus, where you're having to enter and exit the app all the time to watch a stream straight through, or Peacock, where, okay, once you're in, it's great, but you have to find the content you want, and that sometimes requires some digging. So, again, I hear this from a lot of people. It's not just the two of us, that the Disney seems to have gotten the stuff right in terms of understanding their customers and tailoring the app to their customers' preferences. Maybe their algorithm is just more advanced.
Yeah, Paramount Plus definitely has some good content on there, but not as much as, say, Hulu for me. Now, again, each of us is probably going to have a different viewpoint on this, because it might be a lot of people go to Paramount Plus and go like, hey, my favorite shows are on there. Paramount Plus did have some good movies on there. I know there was a horror show series on there too that my wife was really into. Evil. That's they really. I mean, my whole family except for me really loved that. So yeah, they've all got good ones, but some of them are definitely different in terms of the experience. And with Paramount Plus, when I'm going in there, I'm going right to Serie A, Champions League. You mean Argentine League? I'm going to the soccer section. The one thing about Paramount Plus I don't like is how they categorize sports. And you go into the main menu, it's like, okay, home, and then shows, and then, I don't know, movies, and then whatever, like live. And for some reason, sports is considered a show. So sports goes under shows. Now, if you go into shows, then you can select from a whole bunch of different shows, including sports. And then within there, you get the Champions League and those other things. But to me, that always bothers me. I'm like, how is sports categorized as a show? That's not a show. It's its own category. But all right, we move on. I digress. All right, next up, we talked about MLS last week and talking about burning the candle at both ends. And whether it's worth it, and again, it's each of us, listeners, we all have our different habits. You mean some of us maybe work all day and then like to watch games at night, or we have different shifts, or you mean we kind of have a flexible schedule, whatever it may be. But Random Black Rain says, my both end of the candle theory has always been by the time MLS rolls onto TV, everyone is sockered out from the morning games on TV and their kids' games in the afternoon. And that's been my way for a long time, too, is that I'd have kids playing travel soccer games or, AYSO games or just, like, local rec games on a Saturday afternoon or, sometimes Saturday or Sunday mornings, and then a whole 6 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours of soccer from the early morning hours kind of all the way through. And then by the evening, I'm like, I'm done. I need to go out, or I need to, I'm done with soccer for the day. But yeah, no, I think I'm in the same boat there as Random Black Rain. Bill says, regarding your discussion about burning the candle at both ends in last week's show, since my son was born, I've found it hard to find time to watch European matches on weekend mornings, as our family schedule is very busy. In addition to being devoted to my favorite MLS club, though not necessarily the rest of the league, I've developed a fondness for Liga MX, South American leagues, and anything else that's on later in the evening after my son goes to sleep. Maybe one day I'll have more time to watch the big European matches on the weekend, but for now, I'm quite entertained by the best leagues in the Western Hemisphere. Yeah, and I think in many ways, depending on each person's schedules, probably dictates kind of what leagues or clubs they're going to watch more often than not. And yeah, the early morning hours, getting up at 7:30 Eastern time or 4:30 Pacific time to watch a match from the Premier League or from the Championship, it's not for everyone. It is definitely not for everyone. Chris says, I traveled recently to Las Vegas and noticed while walking on the strip, a lot of replica jerseys of European and Liga MX clubs were being worn, along with them being sold in the malls. However, when it came to gear from the local USL club, there was very little in the way of it being sold. Granted, I only stayed on the strip during the trip. This shows me that while Las Vegas has a strong interest in the Premier League and other European leagues along with Liga MX, it may be a difficult market for MLS to break into despite the potential revenue to be made. Any attempt to bring an expansion club to Las Vegas will need to be heavily promoted by MLS, in my view. Now, Kartik, what's your take on MLS to Las Vegas? Would that work?
I don't know. I think that the problem is in markets which are mature markets, right, where European football is already really popular, or South American or Mexican football, it's been a tougher climb for MLS. That having been said, those are generally large markets like Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, Boston, that are of a certain size, right? That are very, very large, your top 10 markets in the country. Las Vegas is not a terribly big television market. It's a growing television market. It's a place that's growing in importance, even economically. But so maybe there is a niche of fans there that would like MLS. The USL team did very well the first few years there when Brett Lashbrook decided to put a team in Vegas after he had a lot of experience here in the state of Florida with Tampa Bay Rowdies and Orlando City in building something. And Orlando and Las Vegas are fairly similar markets, right? Travel, tourism, they're very, very similar markets. So you see the success of MLS in Orlando, and you think, yeah, maybe there's that niche that can be followed in Las Vegas. But I think the difference was in Orlando, there was already an attachment to the USL team that was quote unquote promoted to MLS after they paid a large entrance fee, right? They weren't promoted in a natural way, but Vegas, the attachment to the lights, they did a lot of interesting marketing gimmicks their first couple seasons to get fans, a little bit of a hit from COVID. I don't know if they've lost some of those fans. I don't know how much of their attendance was inflated because they did such a good job of marketing specific nights and specific events and had sort of rebel marketing, which I'm not sure is would be encouraged. It would probably be frowned upon in a culture of conformity like in MLS. So I have a lot of questions about that market. I've always had a lot of questions about that market. Mexican football, in particular, Liga MX does fantastic there. So we'll see. I'm a little dubious also about facilities, stadiums, et cetera, in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I asked you, if you think it'll be successful, and in many ways, I think for MLS, the first measure of success is expansion fee. I mean, it's okay. All right, we'll take the $200 million, whatever it is. That's our level of satisfaction. That's our level of okay. Hey, we've achieved something here. Now the rest of it, though, as far as how well that team would do in not on the field, but off the field in Las Vegas, I mean, from personal experience, I've gone to a bunch of Orlando City games, and when I'm sitting in the crowds, almost always there's tourists next to me. They're like, hey, you could hear different Scottish accents or accents from around the world. And you can tell that they're tourists. They're in town. They're at Disney for the week, and they've come to a game. So Las Vegas, for sure, in terms of travelers from around the United States, but international especially, are going to be going to some of those games for a night out just to see what it's all about. But yeah, as far as the actual market itself and whether that'll be a success, that's why I lean on you, Kartik, for kind of your knowledge there, because from a sports wise, to me it sounds like more, it's like entertainment. It's almost like hey, MLS is in Las Vegas, let's make a big deal out of this, let's have pictures in the crowd of these famous basketball players or different sports pictured in the stadium watching a soccer game, and let's play that up. It seems more like that. From the outside looking in, authenticity would be a concern. Is okay, how authentic is this team going to be? Is this a real soccer club, or is this more of an entertainment vehicle to make MLS look bigger than what it is? All right, next up, Drew says, I'm miffed at World Soccer Talk for not acknowledging the addition of Katie Witham by Charlotte FC on its podcast. Katie is the best soccer reporter in America, and you guys not mentioning it is an insult. Do better, Christopher and Kartik. So, Drew, yep, we have mentioned it. We just did right there. My take on this is there's, 28 MLS clubs, and almost all of them have sideline reporters. Some of them probably have more than one sideline reporter. It's something that we don't cover as kind of intimately, all the different talent moves. That's not what we do. We're more about the actual broadcast and the streaming. And so far, it's middle of February and Charlotte FC has not played its first game yet in MLS. So it's still early, but Drew, yep, Katie has joined Charlotte FC, which is good news. I mean, I know that she's good. But the reason we didn't mention it before is not because of any slight. It's just that, these episodes are so jam-packed with news anyway that oftentimes I find it really difficult to figure out, okay, what do I call this? The title of this episode, what do I call it? Because we discussed about 30 different things. All right, moving on. Champions League. So last week we talked about how Relevant Sports had acquired the rights to the Champions League in the United States to go ahead and sell for the next rights cycle. So whether they're going to shop it around and see if it's going to be Paramount Plus or whoever that's going to pick up the rights, still a long ways off, but that's what we talked about on last week's episode. Football Lovers 100 says, I hope the Champions League stays on Tuduene. Fetchin says, I think the UEFA Champions League rights should stay with Paramount Plus. The English Football League and the FA Cup and the Championship need to go to NBC to combine the rights with the Premier League. It would make sense to have all of the UK packages for soccer, like the Bundesliga and La Liga have on ESPN Plus and Serie A on Paramount Plus. It doesn't make sense to make those soccer rights separate for England. It would be easier to have everything in one place. So, yeah, in a perfect world, it would be easier, but the associations that sell these rights, they're on different cycles. And so, for example, say the FA Cup and the Championship, those rights would be sold by the Football Association and the Football League, which are not the same as the Premier League. And so it is complicated. And yes, in an ideal world, all of the English soccer games would be on NBC. All of the Italian games, such as Serie A and Coppa Italia, etc., would be on Paramount Plus, like it is now. And Champions League, maybe Champions League, who knows where it goes to. But yeah, it makes sense from the consumer point of view, but from the business point of view, it's not as easy as that. Matt wants to talk about the Club World Cup. He says, as a Chelsea fan, this game meant a bit more because Chelsea had never won the Club World Cup and we had lost the final the previous time around. This trophy meant Chelsea would complete football, minus the UEFA Conference League, as the only trophy we were missing. So for me, and I think a lot of online Chelsea fans, this game was a lot more meaningful for us as redemption, and a lot of Chelsea fans were really invested in this tournament. As a side note, I enjoyed the Club World Cup as a whole. I'm a big fan of this tournament being expanded. I think it's a bit criminal that FIFA undervalues the competition with just 7 clubs. However, factoring in player safety and their careers, I do also have my hesitations too about expansion. Maybe the summer tournament replacing the International Champions Cup could be a solution. Last comment, and I'm not sure if this was mentioned, I have been a little inconsistent on listening to the pods lately, but I watch all my games through computer or streaming. And did Peacock's Premier League feeds get a big update in frame rate? I feel the refresh rate is much higher over the last few weeks, and games feel more lively from the picture. Maybe it's my monitors, but I swear it changed. Really happy to get nicer streams from it, at least on my end. Yeah, and it looks like just as the coverage on Peacock and functionality was improved for the Winter Olympics, a lot of those changes carried over to the actual Premier League games too on Peacock. So, yeah, quite a few of our listeners and readers have been talking about it in the comments section at worldsoccertalk.com about the improved Peacock experience. Still not perfect, but it's definitely improving. And then following up on Matt's comment about the Club World Cup, Leo had something to say relatively related. And he says, on a different topic, I want to share my experience. I've been watching more and more games from the UAE, so United Arab Emirates, the league games. These games are available through a separate subscription on the Fanseat website. This is not the fastest soccer in the world, but there are so many technical players out there. The level of broadcast was a pleasant surprise. In addition, reviews of the match day and additional content related to the league are available. In English, in most cases, much better than on Goal TV. It helps to dive deeper into this championship. Now I watch all the games of the match day. There are not so many teams and additional programs. The UAE League was a pleasant surprise to me. And Kartik, geography test your question. So the games from the Club World Cup were played in Abu Dhabi.
Correct.
And Abu Dhabi is in the UAE?
Yes. Okay. In fact, the leading emirate in the UAE.
Okay,
it's
good.
It's the capital of the UAE.
Okay, good. I was just making sure that the segue, I was like second guessing myself. I'm like, wait a second, is Abu Dhabi actually in the UAE? I believe so, but I was correct on that one. Leo does mention one more comment too before we wrap up here. He says, in a recent episode, you discussed the English Championship and related topics. I would like to add something. We hear different opinions here and there, but what's important to me is that you respect your listeners and don't use strong words. In addition, you let the listener have their own opinion. Yeah, I think, yeah, we agree with that. I mean, to me, at the end of the day, I love soccer. I love all soccer. I mean, I love watching soccer. I love playing soccer. I mean, to me, soccer is the ultimate sport. It is my life. If I told my life story, so many of the different milestones in my life would be centered around soccer. It's for me, it adds meaning. It's just beautiful. It's such a pure game. It's not perfect by any means. And some teams are better than other teams. Some leagues are better than other leagues. But at the heart of it, I love watching soccer. And that's been really my goal with World Soccer Talk, really. At the heart of it is to help grow soccer, is to help grow the sport in terms of making it more accessible to fans around the United States, to make it easier to figure out where to watch the games. And that's been my number one goal since day one and still is. But yeah, thank you, Leo, for that. I appreciate it. All right. If you got something that you'd like to ask us or have any feedback on anything we've mentioned, we'd love to read your comments out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, where can they find you on Twitter, and what's going on as far as Twitter goes? Any interesting debates or threads or kind of topics that you've been focusing on lately, even if it's not soccer?
Well, yeah, if it's not soccer, then there's just a lot of political and societal stuff going on. I think in terms of soccer, there's an ongoing debate sparked by Craig Burley of ESPN about which I guess has consumed a lot of my Twitter time.
I'm glad you're mentioning this too, because I forgot to mention it. Go ahead.
Right, about the Club World Cup and its value. So Chelsea fans got very, very defensive. I have to say that I think a lot of fans don't understand, a lot of fans in the United States and a lot of fans on continental Europe, particularly fans of Real Madrid, Juventus, Bayern, don't understand that for a lot of fans in England, the domestic competition comes first before European or international competitions. Now, I realize that's not the culture everywhere else. So when I weighed in on Burley's side, I really took it on the chin because people said, well, you know, what about the Champions League is bigger than the Premier League? The Champions League is bigger. I said, it depends. In England, that's not necessarily the perspective. In fact, then, interestingly enough, after these Twitter spats and everybody went after Burley, I did a space on Twitter on Monday night discussing this subject and found that among fans of Premier League clubs who weren't Chelsea, okay, fans of Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool, Fulham, smaller clubs, right, Spurs, you know, we had a Brighton fan on. Yeah, to them, like, European competition is secondary. It's winning the domestic competition first. Now, the thing that came out of that space was that a lot of the people thought maybe Chelsea fans are self-justifying because they feel in an era of Klopp and Guardiola, it's impossible to win the Premier League. So then you start talking about your ability to win trophies on the continent and internationally. So I don't know. I think it's in the hands of each individual supporter, whether they think Europe is more important or their domestic competitions. But the fact that Burley got such pushback for stating something, I think that is pretty mainstream among supporters in England. And I think part of it is that Burley's a former Chelsea player, and Chelsea fans have come to this conclusion long ago that they think he has some sort of built-in bias against his former club, which I can assure you I don't think is the case. He calls him as he sees him. Craig Burley, one of my favorites personally, one of our favorites on this show. But it just sparked what has been a long week of Twitter discourse. Let's put it that way.
So you can find Kartik on Twitter at KKFLA737. But Kartik, yeah, 100% I agreed with Craig Burley. What I was surprised by is how many U.S. soccer journalists didn't get it and actually argued with him. I'm like, wait a
second.
But
in the U.S., I think it's different, right?
Yeah. Part of for sure.
Thing. But
Burley's point was like, kind of, if you're in England, you know, I mean, the Premier League is in many ways is much, much important, even in the hierarchy of trophies. Now, you mean, if you're Liverpool and you're winning the Premier League, that is massive, absolutely huge. In Liverpool, it's a little bit different because they have a history of winning the European Cup and Champions League. And, you mean, they've got a proud history of that. But Liverpool winning the Premier League is absolutely massive. And to me, you know what I mean? I would put the Premier League number one, Champions League number two, and then League Cup number three, FA Cup number three, League Cup number four, you mean Europa League number five, and then number six probably Club World Cup.
Right. And so where I'm a little controversial is I transpose Champions League and FA Cup with you. And I'm one of my great regrets as a Man City supporter is I think this era of City superiority, we've left a bunch of FA Cups on the table. Let Arsenal and Chelsea take them, really. But it was interesting, the space, because we had a number of Man United fans, as we always do, on that space. And they were of the view that this is Chelsea fans, and I think they like to have pops at Chelsea, right? But this is Chelsea fans just knowing that in the era of Guardiola, and one of the United fans compared Guardiola's dominance at City to Sir Alex Ferguson's dominance at United, that maybe Chelsea fans realize they can't win the Premier League as long as Guardiola's at City. So they're projecting by saying these trophies are more important than the Premier League, which the two Man United fans who chimed in on our space thought was absurd, right? But again, that's a Man United thing. I've known that about United fans too. They're like City fans who think the Premier League is more important than Europe. Now, you're right. Liverpool has a history in Europe, so maybe Liverpool fans feel a little differently. Mm-hmm. Although I think they had gone so long without winning the league a few years ago that that became the emphasis, right? Winning,
yep.
Winning the league. So, yeah, it was an interesting discussion. But the thing that I didn't get, and I again, it's to each individual. The thing I did not like is the number of people in the U.S. in particular who basically said Burley's take was absurd. And really didn't understand that there are cultural differences between England and the continent and differences between England and the U.S. And I would also emphasize the views of a lot of these people have been skewed by Real Madrid, Juventus, Bayern Munich fans, right? The fans of the big clubs in Europe. Now, I'm going to sound like a Premier League fanboy, the thing I detest, right? The thing I've called out on this show for years. But maybe those domestic competitions don't have as much value. Maybe they're not as difficult to win as the Premier League. So that creates a different level of expectation and a different emphasis. I mean, I pointed out time and again that Real Madrid in that era of dominance in Europe, that recent era of dominance in Europe, were generally finishing behind Barcelona in the league every year and several seasons finished behind Atleti. So maybe it's, again, because I'm kind of anglicized in my thinking, I view things differently. I look at Chelsea, people call them European champions, and I say this is a team that hasn't finished higher than third in their domestic league in five seasons. So how can they be champions of anything, is my view. But then again, that's me. I know most people probably disagree with that.
Yeah, I was surprised by how out of touch some of the U.S. soccer journalists were about what Craig Burley had said, and then had replied back and basically saying, this guy's nuts, what is he talking about? When the reality is Craig is 100% correct. And that's the thing, though, too, Kartik. We talked about on this podcast maybe 2 weeks ago about the Club World Cup and how much more meaningful it is to South Americans and fans of South America. And if you watch the Club World Cup at the very end of that game when Chelsea put that second goal in and it was, okay, game over, and you saw the close-ups of those fans in the stadium, the Palmeiras fans, they're in tears. You could tell the men and women were absolutely in tears, and you could tell how much it meant to them not winning this game. Now, if the tables were turned and Chelsea were losing 2-0, Palmeiras was on the verge of victory, Palmeiras fans would be going crazy, of course. But if you had close-ups of those Chelsea fans, they'd probably have their arms folded. They'd be dissatisfied, but they would not be crying. So, I mean, Club World Cup, in terms of kind of culturally, South America is on a different wavelength completely and puts it more on a pedestal than in Europe. And vice versa, too, with the Premier League, is if you ask an Arsenal fan and say, hey, Arsenal fan, you mean you've been a lifelong Arsenal fan, which would you rather win right now? Would you rather win the Premier League or the Champions League? What would they say?
I think they'd say the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Because it puts you on the map. It says, like, you mean, because even when Liverpool were winning the Champions League, Manchester United fans were saying, like, oh, well, big deal. Like, when's the last time you won a Premier League title or a top flight title? That was 30 years ago. So, I mean, for Arsenal fans, I mean, there's definitely that pause.
And I think this thing that Man City somehow is not some sort of accomplished club because they haven't won the Champions League is a continental view. It's a European view. It's a view maybe that's also echoed by Americans. But it is not the view in the UK at all, right? It's just like, in the UK, Manchester City not winning the Champions League and until last season generally being dumped out in the quarterfinals of the round of 16. The quarterfinals of the round of 16 has been, oh, well, you know, that's just a kind of a minor annoyance in what is an era of City hegemony. Now, maybe, again, Chris, this goes back to English fans, English media being a little insular, okay?
For sure.
Do concede that is part of it. And as far as the insularity of England, they see, since Pep has come to Manchester City, they're almost unplayable domestically, whether it be in the league or the League Cup. FA Cup has been, as I mentioned, a little bit of a bugaboo for me as a City fan. But generally, City's getting to the semifinals of the FA Cup and then losing there. So, that may be part of the insularity of England, but to act like it's a view without merit, because again, I think the majority of fans in England feel that way, of most clubs. And Chelsea fans that say they feel differently, maybe a lot of them are foreign Chelsea fans, or they're as the United fans on MySpace the other day felt they were projecting, because they know they feel like they can't win the league as long as Guardiola is at City. And I would argue as long as Klopp is at Liverpool. United fans don't like to give Liverpool credit for anything. So when I said Klopp also, they were like, no, it's because Guardiola's at City. No one's going to beat City. But but I think that's it. They're looking at third place at best most seasons.
Yeah, I think part of this too, and I have to go in a minute, Kartik, but part of this is that the American viewpoint is definitely different than the European viewpoint. Well, probably more so different than the English viewpoint. And the American viewpoint is the lens that they're looking through is cup competitions. So you look at the Super Bowl, which is effectively a cup competition.
Yep.
You look at MLS. Does anyone remember who the Supporters' Shield winners are?
NCAA tournament is a cup competition. I mean, I hate the fact that some of the best teams in the regular season in college basketball lose early in the tournament and people act like they're failures. So that's all cup competition.
Yeah,
all
World, playoffs, World Series, Stanley
World
Cup.
Series, same thing.
So what sports league in the United States has a meaningful league table season where it's, you mean, you play
it
home,
used to
you
be
play
college
away.
Football, but now college football has become more Americanized. I mean, part of my historic comparison between college football and European football had to do with college football having no playoffs, and it was very traditional that way.
Yeah.
But now we have a playoff the last few years, and now they're talking about expanding the playoffs, which will make it less and less meaningful the regular season.
And I can see like how American sports journalists or American soccer fans, I mean, would kind of see things through a different lens and would maybe be confused by what Craig Burley said. But he was 100% correct. And, you know, props to Craig Burley. And hopefully it was a learning experience for some of the people that got it wrong, because, I mean, he was correct 100%. So, all right, Kartik, I'm going to sign off this week. Enjoy football.